Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, in Bonn, Germany. These are our main stories this Monday, the 11th of January. Growing fears of electro violence in Uganda as the February 18th polls nears.
The danger is if the process is not democratic, then of course that has very many serious threats.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir says the formation of a transitional government means his country is back to square one.
We are going to start from scratch, and this is why we have been struggling to create this institution of governance.
Plus, Ghana's answer to Facebook, a new social media site made in Ghana, seeks to unite Christians. All this coming up shortly.
Top story.
We start in Uganda, where election campaigns are continuously becoming violent. There have been reported death and disappearance of some people allied to opposition candidates. President Yoweri Museveni has called on voters to re-elect him, arguing that he needs more time to develop the country. Museveni is facing his toughest battle to retain the presidency. Rights groups and opposition parties have been warned of growing violence leading to the February 18th election. From Kampala, Alex Jita reports.
That was the situation in western Uganda town of Ntungamo, as two groups of young people supporting rival camps faced off. Seven people were killed here, while others were rushed to the hospital with severe injuries. The clashes started after a group of youths supporting President Yoweri Museveni turned up at a rally organized by former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. Their presence allegedly prompted Mbabazi's supporters to attack them. Ntungamo district is one of 59 electro-violence hotspots, according to the Uganda Human Rights Commission. Museveni, who blamed Mbabazi's supporters for starting the fight, said the culprits had been arrested and would be prosecuted. Christopher Aine, Amama Mbabazi's bodyguard, was reportedly one of the rioters. He has since gone missing, but the police have denied statements by his relatives that he too was among those under custody. On the other hand, Mbabazi accused President Museveni's camp for using the fight as a pretext to arrest his supporters. He warned of deeper repercussions if the electoral process is not fair.
The danger is if the process is not democratic and people believe that the outcome does not reflect the wishes of the people, then of course that has very many serious threats.
Another presidential candidate, Kizza Besigye, was stopped by the police while he attempted to access an internally displaced people's camp in Ibukwo in western Uganda. The police said Besigye had no permission to access the area and fired live ammunition to stop him and his supporters. But Besigye insists that he has the right to talk to people everywhere.
What they are doing is simply trying to stifle our freedom to influence the political opinion of people. The Uganda police is acting as an agent of NRM.
NRM, or the National Resistance Movement, is the ruling party under which Museveni has ruled Uganda for the past 3 decades. Uganda's chief of police, General Kale Kaihura, denies that the police are taking sides. He, however, admitted that the force is not well equipped to handle some situations.
You are being misled by a few people who are always apocalyptic about these situations in Uganda. But as far as I'm concerned, we have a robust system. There's no cause for alarm. These incidents here and there are explainable, and we have managed, we have taken people to court.
There are 8 candidates for the presidential race set for February 18th. But observers say the 3 main contenders are Museveni, Mbabazi and Besigye.
Alex Gita in Kampala. Now, Human Rights Watch has just released a report on the state of affairs in Uganda, particularly freedom of expression. Maria Barnett co-authored the report. My colleague Privilege Mushanri spoke to her about the state of freedom and human rights in Uganda.
This report looks at how journalists and activists are working in the run-up to Uganda's February 2016 election. We have a lot of concerns that particularly journalists working outside Kampala and working in languages other than English face a lot of obstructions in reporting on issues of concern in their district, whether it's hosting opposition members or critically discussing the governance of the ruling party. We documented many, many cases in which they had faced threats from various government officials or internal security officers and ruling party members in their areas.
Why is the ruling party and government afraid of this criticism?
I'm sure you know President Museveni has been in power for quite a long time. And one of the challenges for free and fair elections in Uganda is the overwhelming power of the incumbent and the multiple levers of state control there. Because of the way the ruling party operates, there is, I think, a concern amongst ruling party officials and district officials that if they allow criticism of the government, if they allow criticism of the president's governance style, that they too can face problems for not being seen as loyal to the ruling party.
Is there a link between the president's office and those implementers on the ground, or it is just the implementers who are just doing that at their own will?
Yeah, I think it varies. Some of these radio stations, many of them, are owned by parliamentarians from the ruling party. So clearly, I think they see themselves as needing to show loyalty to the president as part of their parliamentary position. Many of them receive financial help in their campaigns from the president and from State House. So there is that link there that the media ownership is already partisan, and that can make presenting divergent views on those radio stations very difficult. But in the case of what are known as resident district commissioners, who are representatives of the president appointed directly by the president in every district in Uganda, there is both a commissioner and a deputy commissioner in every district. Those people clearly talk about having a direct line to the president and that many of their actions they say are carried out at the behest of the president. Now, I think there's a question there because clearly people want to appear powerful in their areas, and it's very difficult for us to say whether they're acting on clear orders or the perception of orders.
Maria Barnett, a senior researcher in the Africa Division at Human Rights Watch International.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Sudan, the UN says nearly 10,000 people have fled fighting to one of their peacekeeping bases. This comes as the country prepares to usher in a transitional government. As James Shimanyula reports, there is a lot of optimism, but doubts of long-lasting peace persist.
More than 12 million people of South Sudan are eagerly waiting for the historic formation of a transitional government of national unity, derived from a peace agreement signed by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar under intense international pressure in August last year. President Kiir has softened his stance and even offered a rare apology.
To sincerely apologize before the people of South Sudan.
The transitional government of national unity to be set up on the 22nd of January is to be in place until the 22nd of August 2018, when a general election is to be held. Already, former Botswana President Festus Mogae, head of the commission monitoring the establishment of the transitional government of national unity, has asserted that plans are underway to ensure that the government is in place as per the peace agreement. Mohai's assertion was confirmed by Ezekiel Gatkuoth, one of the spokespersons for rebel leader Riek Machar.
According to the timetable, the government of national unity should be in place by the 22nd of January 2016, whereby my chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, will assume his responsibility as the Vice President of the Republic of South Sudan. We have reached a power-sharing deal. We have divided the ministries.
16 of the ministries that Riek Machar's spokesman Ezekiel Gatkuoth is referring to have been taken by President Salva Kiir's camp. These include the defense, finance, and justice ministries. Riek Machar's side has 10 ministries, including petroleum and interior. former detainees, as well as an alliance of 18 smaller political parties, have been allocated four ministries. They include Foreign and Cabinet Affairs. President Salva Kiir admitted that the war had damaged the country but said there was still hope.
We are going to start from scratch.
We are going to start from scratch, and this is why we have been struggling to create this institution of governance.
But Festus Mogae, who heads the commission overseeing the full implementation of the peace agreement, says Kiir's recent unilateral decision to create 28 new states could be a stumbling block for South Sudan's quest for peace.
The timing of the creation of the new states, I had hoped that the government would have waited until the formation of the transitional government of national unity.
Rebel leader Riek Machar says President Salva Kiir's action violates the spirit of the August 2015 peace agreement. Machar wants Kiir to rescind the decree. However, Kiir has repeatedly made it clear that he will not reverse the decree.
James Shimanyula compiled that report, and we now go to Ghana, where a young man has created a new social media networking site. The site, known as Love Realm, aims to preach peace and good morals. At this site, you will get a dislike button for nudity or what is seen as bad language. Isaac Kalechi brings us that report on the new technological startup.
Love Realms was created by three siblings born as triplets. One of them, Dr. Yao Ansung Jr., told me what the site is all about.
It's basically a platform, a network we are building to connect people across the globe and also to help people with struggles. When you go to the homepage, you see you can log in with your email, you can log with other social media accounts, you can also create an account, interact with other users.
Ansung Jr. says he came up with the idea of Love Realm after suffering from depression a few years ago.
I was at a point in my time where I was at my lowest, and I realized I had struggles and weaknesses. And all this started when I found myself in an environment outside my country where there were not many Christians. And then I thought to myself, if Christians could connect with each other wherever they are, and also have a platform where they could encourage each other, even if they are down, then it could go a long way to help them. I sat down with my brother and my siblings.
Renowned youth coach in Ghana, Amos Kevin Annan, is excited about the possibilities the new social media site offers. He is one of the counselors contracted to provide counseling for those who sign up to the site seeking help.
I would look at, first and foremost, a sense of community. Secondly, protecting our core values as individuals and our common humanity. And then also use it as a peace platform to preach peace. And for us in Ghana, this should be more like a clarion call, pre-elections innovation to bring young people to speak more about love than hatred.
Co-founder of the Love Realm, Yao Ansung Sr., says financial support to build the site has been purely from family sources. So what do Ghanaians make of this initiative? Here are some views in Accra.
If I were an active social media person, I think I would have signed up because there's a lot of stuff on the general Facebook page and some of us get disgusted with the things that we see.
Religion can be a bit dicey and I would look at so many factors before wanting to join. What are the things they're going to post in there? Whether it's going to help me individually.
It would be a bit boring because you know what's going on like everywhere apart from the Christianity world.
Isaac Kalechi. It's now time to join our Learning by Ear drama series. Crime Fighters is up next.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there. Thanks for tuning into Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. Last time, we heard that poaching is a big issue in the little African town of Bovu. Detective Carl from the anti-poaching department is searching for the boss of a poaching network, the mysterious Mr. G. Meanwhile, Carl's colleague, Detective Allen, is investigating a murder. The young veterinarian, Patrick, has been stabbed and his widow, Lucy, is the prime suspect. But there are also some other leads for Allen to follow. Join us for this third episode, Burning Ivory, when he speaks to Patrick's sister, Mona. These two know each other from way back.
Hello, Alan.
Hi, Mona. How are you today?
How do you think I am, Alan? I've just buried my brother.
Are you still sitting at home and brooding?
He's dead, Alan. My brother is dead.
Listen, Mona. Yes, your brother is gone, and I'm really sorry for your loss. But no amount of weeping is going to bring him back. I'm doing my best to find the killer, and I'll catch him or her. I promise. In the meantime, you have to start living your life again.
Easy for you to say.
Look, you can't lock yourself up forever. Please just get out of the house for a bit. Go for a walk or something. I'll call again soon. Bye, Mona.
Maybe he's right. I don't even know what's been going on in the world these past few days. I guess I'll watch some TV.
A rotting pile of slaughtered elephants and rhinos was discovered today in the jungle outside Bovu. It looks as if the animals were killed earlier this week by poachers who removed the tusks and horns.
What?
Local wildlife protection activist Dr. Susan Galana has reacted strongly to the news. She blamed the government for failing to pass tougher legislation to act as a deterrent and ensure poachers are punished to the fullest extent of the law. Fewer tourists have been coming to the region in recent years, which has been attributed to the rapidly shrinking wildlife population.
Oh my goodness.
The government has promised to leave no stone unturned in the hunt for illegal poachers. The head of the gang is said to go by the name of Mr. G. His real identity is unknown.
Oh.
In other news, students
those
from
poachers.
Bovu University held...
No wonder our hotel is almost empty.
Meanwhile, in Bovu town, there's more talk about elephants and poaching. It's World Elephant Day, and to commemorate it, hundreds of ivory tusks are being set ablaze.
Not as many people here this year, huh?
No.
Hi, I'm Carl.
Musa.
And so, in that spirit, we want to thank all of you for coming together here for this annual ceremony. When we join the rest of the world in celebrating World Elephant Day.
Yes.
To commemorate this day, we ban illegal ivory that has been impounded by the police. And here, to help us light the symbolic fire is none other than the veteran wildlife conservationist, Dr. Susan Galana.
Hypocrites.
Sorry, Musa. What did you say?
What a shame.
I know, right? Such a shame. I mean, so many elephants have died. Look at that mountain of tusks.
It's so wrong.
It is. So what got you interested in this, Musa?
I'm a wildlife photographer.
Really? That's interesting. I'm a cop. I work for the anti-poaching department. So I guess we're both into protecting animals, right?
I guess.
So tell me, what's your job like? Have you ever encountered poachers in the forest?
Sorry, I have to get this.
Ah, sure.
Hello? Yes? Yes? Yes, okay, Betty. I'm on my way. Sorry, I have to go. That was my girlfriend. I haven't seen her for a while. Bye.
Hey, Musa, maybe we could work together. Yeah, your number? Oh, well, aren't we in a hurry?
Carl mixes with the crowd at the commemoration, keeping an eye out for clues. Musa rushes home to an empty flat. Where's his girlfriend, Betty?
a.m. Congratulations, Betty. You finally made it home.
Oh, Musa. You scared me. What are you doing sitting in the dark?
I've been sitting here for the last 3 hours, waiting for you. I mean, you call and ask me to come home, and then you're not even here? Is this the time you usually come home when I'm away, Betty?
Of course not. I met some friends.
I just didn't realize it was getting so late.
Don't lie to me. I know some nights you don't sleep here at all. Are you cheating on me?
Of course not. How can you even say that, Musa? I mean, you go wandering off in the forest for days on end with your camera, while I sit at home and wait for you. And then you accuse me of cheating.
Stop it, Betty. Just stop your lies. Everybody's talking about you. How you never in this house? You're always coming home late at night, drunk.
Everybody? Who is everybody?
Everybody. The neighbors, all right?
You know what, Musa? I can't listen to this anymore.
Where are you going? Don't you walk away from me, Betty. Come back here. You come back here right now.
Betty ignores her boyfriend and just walks away. The next morning, the investigation into Patrick's murder continues. Detective Allen decides to pay a visit to the forensics expert, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Detective Allen, what are you doing here? You officers hate coming down to the lab.
What can I say? I call it an occupational hazard. Can live with it, can live without it.
I guess so.
So, what's the progress? Have you found anything else about the murder of Patrick Igunza?
Yes. In fact, I was just about to call you. We found a letter on the victim's computer that may be of interest to you. It appears to be a blackmail letter sent to a Mr. G.
Mr. G? But nobody knows who he is.
The letter is not signed, of course. It's dated the 14th.
The day before the murder. And what does it say?
It mentions a video that could, quote, reveal to the world the kind of person you really are.
This is very interesting, Sam. Can I see the letter?
Sure. I made a printout. Here you are.
If you don't want me to reveal your identity to the world, you'll have to buy my silence. Blah, blah, blah. Bring the money to the house on the corner of... That's Patrick's and Lucy's house. Could Patrick have been a blackmailer? Is that why he was killed?
Well, Detective Allen, that's up to you to find out.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to look at Patrick's phone records?
Yes. That's another thing. We found some messages that indicate that the victim was having an extramarital relationship. According to the phone company, the messages were sent to a cell phone registered to one Betty Karangi.
So Patrick really was having an affair. Do you know the address of this Betty?
Yes. The cell phone company was kind enough to give it to us. Here it is.
Good. We seem to be making some headway. Thanks, Sam. Please call me if you find anything else.
Of course. And don't worry, Detective. I'll be sure to bring it upstairs so you don't have to come all the way down to the lab.
Sam.
And with that, we reach the end of this third episode of On the Trail of the Poachers. That's a lot of new questions and new lines of inquiry. Be sure to tune in next time. And if you want to listen to this episode again, just click on dw.com/crimefighters. Or you can visit our Facebook page and send us a comment. Bye for now.
Interesting stuff to learn there from our Crime Fighter series. And now a quick recap of what we've covered in this edition of Africa Link. Human Rights Watch has warned that freedom of expression and assembly are under threat in Uganda as the country gears up for election. Thousands of South Sudanese have fled to a UN base despite efforts to end fighting. That's all we had for you this morning, and if you like, you can send us your opinion on the stories that we've aired, either via text message to +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or you can send us a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko, saying have a nice start into the new week.